Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. I'm Anirudh Kanesetti. Today I have with me Aditya Ramnathan and Pranav RS of our Geostrategy program, and we are going to be talking about a report that's recently been released by the Australian National University. Now, this report is called The Future of the Undersea Deterrent, a Global Survey, and it goes into a great deal of detail about how various countries are basically developing their maritime arsenals and specifically how they're developing their nuclear-capable ballistic submarines. So let me just try to broadly contextualize this for you guys before we get into this discussion. I'm sure that all of us are familiar with what's happening in the South China Sea. It's probably one of the world's most contested and most closely followed maritime conflicts and competitions. Now, what's been happening over there is that over the last few decades, and specifically over the last few years, a number of islands whose ownership is disputed between a number of different countries in the region have gradually been taken over by China. Now, China has been going out of its way to actually convert these into full-fledged naval installations. And while, of course, it's easy enough to look at the surface of this conflict and say that it's fundamentally about resources, fundamentally about oil, fundamentally about fishing rights, it's really about a lot more than that, as you can tell from the fact that the US is actually interested in what China has been doing. And the reason for that, the reason why this is an issue that is so closely watched, that is of such great interest to us geopolitics nerds, is because of the kind of ramifications that responses to the competition dynamic there have across the world. Because while you might see the US and China trying to build up arsenals that are targeted towards each other, we see that people who see the US as a rival, or who see China as a rival, also respond to that, also build up their own deterrence and counter deterrence. And so basically the entire deterrence structure, if I can use that word, the kind of fabric that governs the response and counter response of players in the international domain is really determined a lot of ways by what happens at these kind of flashpoints. So what we're going to be doing over this episode is first trying to understand the South China Sea a little better, just to give you that context, try to understand US and China competition between the two within that context, then kind of look at how India is responding to that, and look more broadly at how technology might be changing the dynamics of this kind of undersea competition in the decades to come. So with that said, let's begin with you, Aditya. Can you tell us a little bit more about the South China Sea, who the actors that are involved there, what has China been doing recently that has been of consternation in international circles?
Thanks, Anirudh. The South China Sea is, of course, like you said, a highly contested and yet fairly geographically small area. China has this infamous nine-dash line, which it uses to claim territory right across the South China Sea. The principal rival claimants are the Philippines and Vietnam. One question is, why on earth is China so interested in the South China Sea? There are obvious strategic reasons for this. The South China Sea is the route into the Strait of Malacca, which is your gateway into the Indian Ocean. And so much of China's trade passes through that region. It's also an area where Chinese have historically been involved in some form or the other. And I think most importantly, it's critical to the way the Chinese think about maritime and naval strategy. Chinese are very much focused on land features or rock features and anchoring defenses based on that. And also very relevant to what we're going to discuss today, there's good reason to believe that the Chinese are thinking about using the South China Sea as a so-called bastion for their ballistic missile nuclear submarines.
Yeah, so there's a few things I kind of want to unpack here. The first crucial point I think that we need to understand is really the geography of this region, right? You pointed out how China's interest right now is in fortifying these islands. But once you look at it, it's quite obvious that these aren't just islands, and in fact have been referred to by many analysts as island chains. Now, if you were to look at the maritime geography of India, for example, the only big non-sovereign landmass we have off our waters is Sri Lanka. Beyond that, the Indian Ocean is essentially open to Indian navigation. But that's not really the same for China. In China, there are a number of very large American or American allied military installations that are sprinkled across both the first and second quote-unquote island chains. And from what you're telling me, the fact that China is investing in kind of fortifying that island chain, kind of making it into a bastion, seems in a lot of ways to be geared towards kind of ensuring that it has that kind of freedom in its immediate waters around it, right?
I will agree that the Chinese think about the first island chain, as they call it, which really extends from the Philippines through Taiwan, possibly all the way to Sakhalin Islands in the north. They think of this as a barrier in a sense, and you can't necessarily blame them. Taiwan and Japan are allies of the United States. The waterways through these archipelagos are fairly narrow, which means that they are easily monitored. You can always track surface ships quite easily, but even with submarines, we have reason to believe that the Americans have a fairly extensive system of underwater buoys throughout the Western Pacific, which are geared specifically towards tracking Chinese submarines.
That's very interesting. That actually ties into the second point that I want to raise, which is, why submarines? Why is China making this area into a bastion for submarines now? Can you tell me how that might make sense at a strategic level? Why submarines and why not, say, a destroyer with a lot of guns that go boom, boom?
So obviously what we're talking about here are specifically so-called ballistic missile nuclear submarines. The typical abbreviation used is SSBN, meaning ship submersible ballistic nuclear. It's an old code. So SSBNs are nuclear-powered submarines that can also launch nuclear-tipped ballistic missiles. So they are meant to be part of your deterrent force. Now, during the Cold War, there were basically four countries that had such SSBNs. These were the United States, the Soviets, the British, and the French. Today, you have four countries heading in that direction. Two of these are obviously China and India, which already field ballistic missile nuclear submarines. The other two are actually Pakistan and North Korea, which have diesel-electric powered submarines that can potentially launch some sort of nuclear-capable missiles.
It's very interesting how it's North Korea and Pakistan that are moving towards having this deterrent at sea, basically. I think the underlying strategic logic for that is that even if the nukes that you have on land, on in your hardened bunkers, are taken out by an enemy first strike, then your enemy will not know when your submarines will be coming for them, because it's just so much harder to detect a submarine. The submarine can get really, really close to your cities before, like, actually before you're even aware that the submarine is around. So I can see how it creates basically a much more complex strategic problem here. So with that said, let's try to bring the focus to the South China Sea. Now, you mentioned that the Americans have basically turned the Western Pacific into a place where if something happens, the Americans are going to hear about it, right? How does the Chinese program of building more nuclear submarines actually feed into that? How does it respond to it?
I think that the way they are responding to that is specifically at the moment using the South China Sea as a barrier. Remember that the Chinese have militarized all those so-called rocky features in the South China Sea, which means that they both have the ability to monitor from the surface as well as build their own monitoring systems underwater to detect enemy vessels in the region. That gives them a so-called bastion, or a fairly protected fortress in which their ballistic missile nuclear submarines can lurk waiting for an order. The rest of the Western Pacific is at the moment a little tricky, but I suspect that the Chinese will use a combination of quieter submarines as well as sheer quantity to overwhelm American abilities to track them. The other political option they have, of course, is to somehow integrate Taiwan with the mainland. If you look at it simply as a matter of maritime strategy, just having Taiwan as an outcrop of the PRC would absolutely just open it up into the rest of the Pacific.
As natural as the Chola Empire having Sri Lanka as a natural add-on to it, of course. But again, so at the same time that having Taiwan makes absolute sense from a maritime strategy perspective, isn't it also possible that Taiwan could potentially be essentially a flashpoint in the region? Because it seems very unlikely to any reasonable person observing it that China would actually use military force right now to kind of annex Taiwan, short of there being a confrontation with the Americans, which will inevitably feature, I'm assuming, American aircraft carriers. How does the situation change? And like, how does China deal with, for example, America's overwhelming preponderance on that front when it comes to the sheer number of surface craft that the Americans can deploy? It might not be that high right now in the South China Sea. They might not have those many submarines, attack submarines, and so on and so forth in the South China Sea right now. But it seems that the Chinese are building capabilities that don't necessarily aim at a symmetric sort of conflict with the Americans, right? It's all about asymmetric deterrence. So you have stuff like their so-called aircraft carrier killer missiles and stuff like that.
Yes, exactly. Those are the so-called A2AD or anti-access, anti-denial capabilities. This is just jargon. But what it really means is that, once again, China is using land-based capabilities to project power into the water. So China has basically a whole arsenal of short-range and medium-range ballistic missiles that it could potentially use to target individual vessels in the Western Pacific.
Can you tell us a little more about which missiles, what kind of capabilities, what kind of ranges, what kind of submarines are we talking about, Pranav?
So the Chinese have a whole range of land-based missiles. These missiles are mobile land-based missiles. The most prominent one is actually the DF-21 missile, which has the capability of hitting medium-range targets, particularly the aircraft carriers. In fact, they also have the DF-36, which they recently showed off in October, which could carry hypersonic warheads as well. The Chinese have always looked for fighting wars within or conflicts within their region. The term that they use in the latest defense white paper is they look to fight informatized local wars. So the anti-access area denial or A2AD capability is to have not just your traditional hardware systems, but also to have other forms of attacks, such as cyber and space capabilities, to deny the enemy the chance to come into your territory or come close to your region, right? Focusing specifically on submarines, the Chinese currently have 4 Chin-class submarines that carry the JL-2 sea-launched ballistic missiles. Many have pointed to the fact that the Chinese submarines are very noisy, the SSBNs. Many Chinese scholars themselves have acknowledged this fact. So as Aditya mentioned earlier, the SSBNs will operate in what is called a bastion strategy, which is you're having these submarines operate with close to your own waters, and these will be accompanied by anti-submarine warfare ships and anti-submarine warfare submarines, right? I do not think the Chinese still have the capability to deploy to outer oceans and have a permanent deterrent that is patrolling the oceans. This is mainly because of 2 problems that the Chinese have faced. Firstly, the submarines are quite vulnerable. Secondly, it creates a problem of civil-military relations vulnerability. Many of the Chinese documents and many of the writings show that the Chinese are very, very scared of losing control of their nuclear deterrent. They want the Central Military Commission and the highest leaders to maintain control of the nuclear weapons at all time. When you place missiles on submarines, you in some way lose control of them because you have to keep them active at all times. Unlike land-based missiles, you can't keep the warhead separate from the missile itself, which is the delivery vehicle. You can't keep them separate, which the Chinese have traditionally done. On submarines, these have to be packed together and put into tubes, and they're always ready to for launch. There is no physical barrier to not launching the weapon, right? So these are 2 vulnerabilities the Chinese have expressed. But likely, when we go to the 2030s, what we will see, and what this report also says, is that by the 2030s, China will deploy its 3rd generation of nuclear submarines, which will be called a Type 96. Going by the designations they've given. These will be more advanced. These will be less noisy. And the Chinese have largely had this tradition of learning from the past and improving upon the technology.
Yeah, just to summarize what Pranav said, one, the Chinese, they don't really have a very favorable maritime geography. You have the first island chain, you have the Straits of Malacca. There is this inherent barrier to into going and patrolling in the open seas of the Pacific Ocean.
Aside from all the American ships that are already patrolling the region.
Exactly. That's one factor. The other factor, as he pointed out, is that the Chinese nuclear posture is a fairly relaxed one. They tend to have a fairly small arsenal. The normal estimates for their arsenal size, nuclear arsenal size, go at about 300. That's probably an underestimate. They probably have a few hundred more, but it's still a fairly small arsenal. And the Chinese, from what we understand, prefer in general to demate warheads and missiles. And when you start deploying ballistic missile nuclear submarines, you have those 2 things permanently mated. You have to pre-delegate some amount of launch authority to the people on the submarine. And there is a command and control issue where you need to somehow be able to communicate with the submarine, even in the moment of crisis. So that basic problem of pre-delegating and command and control is a dilemma that India is also grappling with at the moment.
It must be something that most nuclear powers would have to grapple with, right? Because there's always a leap of faith involved when you are giving your country's nuclear arsenal to the hands of officers. They're invested with enormous power, potentially power that could wipe out the human race.
Yeah, so obviously there are usually some sort of barriers. For instance, the United States is known to have something called permissive action links on their nuclear weapons, which do not allow for unauthorized launch or unauthorized detonation specifically of a warhead. So there will be some sort of barriers. You will need some sort of confirmation code, for example, from the outside in order to effectively launch. But beyond that, you're on your own. We are told, for example, that in the United Kingdom, when a ballistic missile nuclear submarine is not able to contact the mainland and has reason to believe that something has gone horribly wrong, they open up a locker with a letter from the Prime Minister giving them instructions about what to do.
Oh, very cool, very British. Do they also get a glass of chilled martini in the safe house as well?
I'm sure it's part of the standard operating procedures.
I'm quite shaken to hear that news. Now we have a better understanding of just broadly how the strategy of all this works. How exactly is India responding to this? Now, I can just say logically that the Indian Ocean looks like a great place either for projecting power aggressively, which has been the general way of Indian way of doing things, or for just like locking down your choke points, setting up, you know, anti-ship capabilities, setting up a monitoring system that's capable of listening to every damn thing happening in the ocean or just looking at it from above, right? Which direction do you see India heading towards?
Well, the one big difference between India and China is that India is blessed with a great maritime geography.
It's just not blessed with a great economy like China.
Exactly, yeah. So, as you said, the Indian Peninsula, it just juts out right into the middle of the Indian Ocean. It's heaven sent to monitor that area, to dominate that area. We do hear that India has, in collaboration with the United States, set up a system of sonar buoys along the Strait of Malacca, the mouth of the Strait of Malacca. So it should have a fair amount of ability to monitor and track Chinese submarines. But, you know, like you said, India doesn't have an economy, or at least not much of an economy. And the Chinese are currently building something like 2.5 submarines every year.
2.5 submarines a year.
Yeah, this includes both diesel electrics and nuclear powered. Those nuclear powered submarines could be attack submarines or ballistic missile submarines. And it's the attack submarines, whether they're diesel electrics or nuclear powered, that are actually most relevant to us in the Indian Ocean. They are basically China's ability to make life difficult for India's own navy, as well as for India's own ballistic missile nuclear submarines, because a nuclear attack submarine is the best hunter of a ballistic missile submarine.
So if we are looking at a situation where Chinese attack subs are able to get into the Indian Ocean, whether we know about it or not, and are potentially able to threaten our sea-based nuclear deterrent, then what that means is that all of a sudden, if you're an Indian nuclear strategist, your sea-based deterrent isn't looking so good anymore. And your land-based deterrent, your air-based deterrent is already under threat from Pakistan and from China. So how does India respond? Does India respond by investing in more SSBNs, or are we investing in anti-submarine capabilities?
So I have a fairly heretical view about this. Let me just go over the standard view very quickly and talk about how I think we could maybe sequence our approach to this a little differently. India is currently in the process of building 4 nuclear-powered ballistic missile submarines. One is already in service. It's supposedly started deterrent patrols in late 2018. I'm pretty sure that's not actually the case.
God.
But because India, like China, is very hesitant about giving that sort of authority to somebody on a submarine. Within the decade, if all goes well, within the decade, India will have 4 ballistic missile nuclear submarines. That would technically give it the ability to have at least one submarine at sea at any time. This is a so-called continuous at-sea deterrent, which means that at absolutely any time, India will always, at least theoretically, have the ability to retaliate or to fire in whatever conditions those nuclear-powered ballistic missiles. Now, what India doesn't have at the moment is enough diesel electrics, and India really is at a very nascent stage with building its own nuclear-powered attack submarines. What that means is that force protection is actually pretty difficult. How do you protect those ballistic missile nuclear submarines? One is you can build them really quiet. But India, like all countries, is right now at that initial learning stage, just like China is. And its nuclear submarines are likely to be fairly noisy. Remember, the Chinese are actually trying to get used to the Indian Ocean waters. The Indian Ocean waters are fairly warm. The acoustic qualities of the Indian Ocean are fairly different, and the Chinese are trying to get used to them so that they're able to better detect both surface vessels as well as submarines in the area. One way out for India is, of course, to use its own landmass to build anti-submarine capabilities. This could be, for instance, having anti-submarine warfare aircraft taking off from coastal bases and monitoring the seas, monitoring primarily the Bay of Bengal and the Indian Ocean. But further into the Indian Ocean, things get a little dicey. The other problem is, of course, that neither India or China actually have submarine launch ballistic missiles of sufficient range. Consider the Chinese, for example. Their main deterrent threat is the United States, not India. If the Chinese were to use the South China Sea as their bastion, their current JL-2 missiles have a range of, I think, about 3,500 kilometers. They're not going to reach the United States. Hmm. Now, they're supposedly building a JL-3, which is about 7,500 or 7,000 kilometers. But it's still not quite where it needs to be. Similarly, India's Arihant-class ballistic missile submarines carry the Sagarika missile, which has an absurd range of 750 kilometers. Which means it's
that's nothing.
Yeah, which means it's basically really only effective as a deterrent if it's in the Arabian Sea and pointing at Pakistan. Mm. Now, of course, India is also testing the K-4 missile, which has a range of about 3,500 kilometers. But India also really needs to increase the range of its submarine launch ballistic missiles, because just having a minimum range is not enough. The fundamental idea of a ballistic missile submarine is mobility. Mm-hmm. So you want to be able to fire that missile from somewhere far away in order to create uncertainty in your enemy about your location.
You shouldn't have essentially a missile system that your enemies know can only be fired from offshore Karachi, basically.
Yeah. Or in the case of China, you know, the North Bay of Bengal. India mm-hmm. could follow its own bastion strategy in that region, but it's hardly ideal.
Yeah, but there's another interesting thing that I read. What India has not done, but has all the resources that it needs to actually do, which is not to depend too much on its submarines at this moment, but rather use its vast landmass and to deter China. Because why do you need SSPNs? You want SSPNs because they're survivable. They're survivable, and in case all your aircraft and your land-based missiles are taken out, you still have this undetectable deterrent that's patrolling and could potentially attack your enemy. One of the interesting pieces that I read in the Bulletin of Atomic Science is that India could actually place its long-range missiles in the southern part of India and its deeper territories. Hmm. And these missiles would still be able to reach Chinese mainland. Not just Chinese mainland, Chinese cities that the Chinese hold very valuable, right? You want to hold at risk what your adversary values the most. Mm. Chinese cities are obviously the most valuable. Beijing, Shanghai, Chengdu, all of these cities are really valuable.
And all of these would be in range of Indian long-range missiles, even if you put them along the peninsula.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. Right? Mm. So India could do this. They could
Absolutely.
Actually.
There's no reason not to do it. Why have we not done it already?
Firstly, it's not clear that India is not doing anything of this sort. I suspect India is, but I'm glad you brought this up, Pranav, because this is my heretical view. And I think a handful of people share it. Maybe Vipin Narang, maybe Frank
You
Donald.
And I share it.
And yes, thank you. I have company in Pranav. I do think that India should focus primarily on building a second strike capability or survivable arsenal on land at the moment. This does not have to be super expensive. You can use decoys. You can use existing rail and road networks. You can build tunnels. And by doing all this, you create fairly complex problems. These are problems that you create by mobility, by deception, and by hardening. And these are not very easy to solve. Remember, a ballistic missile submarine is great so long as it's not detected. Once it's detected and somebody shoots it down and somebody sinks it, which is actually fairly simple, it's a steel can in the water. Every missile in that submarine is then after that non-operational. Mm. So in a sense, it's both a very robust leg of your deterrent, but it's also potentially one of the most brittle. So you can really maximize the strength of your submarine deterrent once you have really good submarines. And I think that what India should do is actually sequence its submarine building by first focusing on nuclear attack submarines and really honing that capability, possibly over a decade or two, before moving on to ballistic missile submarines. Now, of course, the ballistic missile submarine project is set in stone, and nothing that Pranav and I say here is going to change a damn thing. But I do think that we should be aware that we have missed this opportunity. And by trying to build ballistic missile submarines now, remember, India has a finite amount of money. It means that there are opportunity costs that arise from it.
What never ceases to amaze me about India's response to China is that it just doesn't seem to make a lot of strategic sense. It's quite obvious that China is playing a game with the US. China has the resources to compete with the US in the games that it's trying to compete with. In the places where it can't compete, it plays asymmetrically, it plays dirty to kind of level the odds, create problems for the US that the US has to respond to. India doesn't do any of that.
I think one of the arguments that could be made is that Indian bureaucracy is just more worried about Pakistan than about China, especially on the nuclear side.
Definitely that, but I think the much easier answer to all this is that beating China and creating complex strategic problems doesn't win elections.
Exactly. And what I would also say is that we can't think that the Chinese nuclear doctrine of no first use is set in stone. If China has a bigger arsenal, which is more survivable, and, you know, circumstances definitely change, then China could modify its nuclear posture. It could say, we are introducing conditions to our no first use, or we're abandoning no first use entirely because it doesn't serve our interests. And, you know, India can't do anything that time. China will be an existential threat to an Indian arsenal, right? We should think about the long-term goals. What are our long-term interests? And Pakistan is currently our focus. Even the way we base our missiles, even the way our air-delivered nuclear weapons are based, are also all targeted towards Pakistan, not much towards China.
Yeah, and you know, it's not just the NFU. The Chinese frequently worry about American conventional attacks on their nuclear arsenal. India should be similarly worried about the potential that
Chinese.
About potential Chinese conventional attacks on India's nuclear arsenal and what that means, which is why survivability is a complex problem that requires more open and transparent debate in this country.
Well, here's to open and transparent debate about a lot of things, guys. On that note, thank you both for joining me, and thank you so much for listening to All Things Policy.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.